The hour of 8:30 having arrived, I'm going to call to order State and Local Government Operations Reform, Technology, and Elections. Members, we have a confirmation today of two members of the Minnesota Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. So I'm going to move that the committee recommend that these two be confirmed, and this will go to the General Register. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record. So why don't we start from left and right? So go ahead, Gary.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Gary Goldsmith. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance Board. The two members that we have here for confirmation will introduce themselves, but to my immediate left is Greg McCullough. He is a newly appointed member, appointed during the interim to fill a four-year term. And to his left is John Scanlon. You may remember he was here a year ago. He filled a term of a member who had resigned from the board, and he's now been reappointed for his regular four-year term. And both of these members fill slots that are not supporting the Republican Party and are otherwise unrestricted.
We don't have a quorum, so why don't both of you just introduce yourselves, and then hopefully by the time you're done, we'll have a quorum. So welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good morning. My name is Greg McCullough, and as Mr. Goldsmith said, I am a relatively new member to the panel. I began my work last May, and it's good to be here with you this morning.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. I'm John Scanlon. I'm from St. Paul. I've been a member of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board since October 2008 and had the honor of your confirmation last time this year. And I'm back again for a full four-year session, as Mr. Goldsmith mentioned.
Any discussion? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could any one of you three gentlemen just walk us through the process of how you got to be in front of us today, just so we have comfort that there was a full vetting?
Mr. Goldsmith, you want to tell us?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, members. All six members of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board are appointed by the governor, and all six are confirmed by both the House and the Senate, the only public officials that are. And so the prerogative really is with the governor to pick those people that he feels will serve the board in a nonpartisan way, although the board is multi-partisan. It does have two former legislators, one Republican, one Democrat. The other criteria is that no more than three members of the board support the same party, and we do have three members who support the Republican Party. Mr. McCullough and Mr. Scanlon are independent members. They don't support any particular political party, and so that's the slot they fill. Although they're otherwise unrestricted, they also do not have political activity in the form of officer or any particular involvement with a political party. The governor's staff vets the members, and when the governor's satisfied, he nominates them.
All right. Further discussion? Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question that maybe you've stated previously or today. Is there a geographic balance, or is there an otherwise looked at balance to the board?
Mr. Goldsmith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Poppy, members, the balance is only, it's in the statute, and it's only a political balance, so that we never have more than three supporting one party, and we always have one former legislator from two different parties. Otherwise, there is no geographical balance other than what the governor might choose. We do happen to have, former Representative Hilda Betterman, who is from the far north. I don't know how far, but I know it's more than about an hour and a half drive to get here. And in the past, we've had members from quite far out state, and we do support their travel costs and so on to get to the meetings.
Further discussion? Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I can keep thinking up questions until we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Okay, we're fine. Wonderful. We're ready to go.
Then, Mr. Chair, I'll pass.
All right. Now, we have a quorum, and we can ask any questions you may want. But, all right, seeing no more discussion, I'll renew my motion that we recommend the confirmation of these two appointments. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
First bill on the agenda is House File 2703, Representative Greiling. She's not here. All right. House File 2840, Representative Swales. Representative Swales is not here yet. There is an object lesson that may be learned by some members today. House File 2360, Representative Dabney gets his wish if he is here. Grab him, find these people quickly, or it's going to be a real short hearing. Representative Simon was going to do Representative Thiessen's bill, and we don't have Thiessen or Simon. This is Swales. Representative Swales, you're up. Just to let members know, we start on time and we move through the agenda, and if members aren't here and we've moved everything we're going to do for the day, we're then done, just so everybody understands. Representative Swales, I'm going to move that House File 2840 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. So Representative Swales, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's such a pleasure to be here today and to introduce to you a bill that is the product of a year's worth of work on the part of Representative McFarland and I. A year ago, we had been invited by Chair Greiling of E12 Finance to investigate the area of shared services in the state, and it created quite a journey for us, literally. Representative McFarland and I traveled and crisscrossed the state over the summer and the fall. We visited 5 of the 8 service cooperatives in the state. Carol visited an intermediate school district. I visited Ties here in Roseville and learned of the tremendous work that has been going on across the state since the mid-70s with our service cooperatives. A lot of people aren't even aware that this is going on. They are an educational unit that takes smaller school districts, and they're able to provide a lot of the things that a larger school district does on its own. Our first one we visited was Marshall, Minnesota, where they have over 40 member districts. They do all of the payroll, a lot of the back office kind of work from a central location, and this is pretty typical of the service cooperatives across the state. One of the things then that we asked as we went across the state visiting Fergus Falls, St. Cloud, Marshall, Brainerd, Mankato, everywhere that we went, we asked the same question: what are the obstacles that are keeping local units of government from working together or collaborating? I'm going to ask Representative McFarland to share some of the things that we learned on that journey.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, there's a lot of things we learned. Some of the things that we learned were in Mankato. We learned how they are delivering low incidence programs to other districts across the state. In Fergus Falls, I learned that their insurance pool up there is providing health insurance for the city of Matamidi, which is right next to where I live here in the Twin Cities. We found that the Staples Service Cooperative does national procurement for all others. We learned that in central Minnesota, there are four fire halls and stations within a 4-square-mile radius. We don't see that as being efficient, and we find that there are obstacles there. We also have looked at the idea that the broadband initiatives that are going on around the state are happening in parallel tracks instead of somebody putting this all together and having a unified program. These are just some of the areas that we found.
So, Mr. Chair.
Representative Swales.
The 5 themes that emerged then, and this has been really an interesting thing. I have a wonderful intern from the Humphrey Institute, and I've already put her on in charge of doing some of the digging on this. But there are statutes, laws, and rules in that there are 40, she typed up 42 pages of statutes about collaboration. There they are. And there are many of these rules that are duplicative or that impede efficiency. The delivery of services and goods is often inefficient. Greater Minnesota does not always have consistent broadband access, which really creates obstacles to doing
things efficiently. We have outdated systems to that handle financial transactions. And as the Representative McFarland said, the area in Crosby with a four-mile radius, there are four fire stations belonging to four townships. They would like to consolidate, but the thing that is keeping them from that is their budgets are so tight. They cannot afford the money to pay attorney's fees to drop joint powers agreements, nor can they figure out how to merge the pension plans for the different firefighters. So those are the kinds of obstacles that get in the way, and we have created a bill that will take some of the key stakeholders, put them at the table. This would include townships, cities, counties, and the school districts, plus three unions, and have them sit and investigate these five themes so that by the beginning of session in 2011, we not only have a report on the things that they have found, but legislation that will begin to either repeal or undo some of the obstacles that are causing less collaboration among our units of government. So, Mr. Chair, with that said, we went through it very quickly.
Representative Swales, on page 2, line 2.7, 2.8, mm-hmm. you require the state auditor to provide staff and administrative support. Is there someone from the state auditor to tell us that they're in agreement with that?
Mr. Chair, she is not here this morning. She was in strong agreement and helped us actually put that language into the bill when we met with her. Since that time, though, with additional cuts to her office, she is concerned about that, and the member organizations that are listed here have all said that they would contribute to the staffing of this committee.
So, Representative Swales, the answer would be that she can no longer provide staff support?
At our previous hearing, she made that statement, yes.
There is a concern about mandating to the agencies in the situation that we're in additional responsibilities, considering the scope of the fiscal problem that we have.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McFarland.
I think to clarify from what I heard was that she is willing to facilitate all the meetings and do those on as part of her job without any additional cost. The cost that she was talking about was the cost to prepare a report, and she was unsure about the office staff for that particular part.
All right. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, may I make one other statement?
Representative Swales.
In statute, I believe it's Section 162, the reason the state auditor's office is a good fit for this is that the purview of best practices in government is her responsibility. In fact, I have here the state auditor's report from 2005. It was created by Auditor Anderson at that time. Many of the same themes that we are talking about in this bill are stated in this report from 2005.
Representative Swales, I'm not questioning that. I'm simply questioning a mandate that you put on an office that's receiving at least an across-the-board cut of 6%, and that's the reason why the motion is to send this to Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Representative Sterner.
Thank you, Chair Plowski. One of my concerns is a lot of these groups I think we're going to meet anyway over the interim and such, and I think it can happen without setting up a formal governing body, and it's so specific that, you know, like there's other unions that aren't in here and other people that it just seems like it adds another red tape to our process.
Representative Swales? Or Representative McFarland,
I think that our witnesses would be the best to answer that question.
Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
I'm Sarah Leverins with AFSCME Council 65. For those of you who are still learning about us, we are the council that represents 13,000 people, employees in Greater Minnesota, local government employees, the smaller counties, the smaller cities, that sort of thing. We did have offered in the Senate an amendment to add us to the bill so that you would have both Greater Minnesota and the metro area represented in this. We thought that this committee had a lot of things to do and that we wouldn't add it here, but we feel positive about this. I know there was some conversation about perhaps adding the Minnesota Inter-County Association to balance it out, but Under those circumstances, we feel comfortable here.
Could you repeat your name again, please?
Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, Leverenz, L-E-W-E-R-E-N-Z, as in zebra.
Okay.
And I represent AFSCME Council 65.
Thank you. Then you're
and we're very supportive of the bill.
Supportive enough to commit the resources in the form of what would be called currency?
If you will note, Mr. Chairman, when you cut local government aid to the local governments, not you, but when the legislature cuts that or any other form of transfer payment to the counties and the cities, they cut our members. That cuts our budget. I am the lowest person on the seniority list with no authority to commit anything.
Well, and I'm not asking what my question was initially was that these organizations, we were just told in testimony, had decided that they would support and maintain this in lieu of the state auditor.
Mr. Chairman.
And that's my question, because that would mean someone's paying for the report, someone's paying for staffing, and if it isn't the state auditor's office, it's someone, and you're coming up and testifying your full support, and we just took testimony that the organizations that are listed here are going to support whatever this is going to do. The report that Representative Swales just held up might be one of them. So I understand where you are, and I know about local government aid cuts. I'm fully aware of them. I find it commendable in this fiscal crisis that your organization can come up and make that type of a commitment, sort of.
Mr. Chair, just so you know,
Representative Swales.
Council 65, this is the first time they've been at the table with us, and so we really need to have further conversations with them about how they will be involved. So I do have people here from the other units of government. If you could give them at least a minute to make a statement.
Well, Representative Sterner, are you finished with your question?
I am.
You are. Okay. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I guess funding and mandates notwithstanding, this is an excellent effort. And, you know, as we're looking at redesigning, looking at services on the local units of government, collaboration and working together in efficiency is going to be the key. And I know on a website that we've set up on folks around the state can write in their ideas. This looking at sharing services on the local level has by far probably been the number one thing that I'm seeing. So I commend this, and I think anything we can do to reduce silos and get local governments to work together and so forth along service delivery lines is a big plus. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, it would appear we have several individuals who wish to testify, so welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ken Sewell, I'm with the Minnesota Association of Townships. I'll begin by briefly addressing Representative Sterner's question because I know that's an issue that has arisen in other task forces that we have been supportive of. And the answer is, while it's true we can get together, sometimes it's very helpful to just have that extra little impetus of statute and a clear structure of why we're gathering. So although it is certainly feasible for us to get together and try to work over the interim, and certainly as associations, we do that all the time. Mm-hmm. The broader scope of this task force working group is something that we believe the legislation is helpful and directive on. As a preemptive strike, I will touch briefly on the financial piece, and I have to say that that isn't a part that has come up in the conversations I've been involved with. Our association in the past has been receptive, but I have not had an opportunity to talk to my board of directors about that. Our past experience is that most of these reports are fairly nominal in cost, but it is a conversation that needs to be had with my board of directors, and I have not had that yet.
Well, Mr. Solomon, the others who are testifying today, you might want to take a look at the report that Representative Swales held up, get an idea of what it costs, and then start figuring out how you're going to pay for it. As a member of the Finance Committee to where this bill is going. Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Joe Matthews with the Association of Minnesota Counties. I'll just echo the comments of Mr. Sulem, and I will say that we, too, will be discussing this with our board prior to the Finance Committee so we can have that question answered as to what resources will be available from our association to help further the report and support the task force. But, again, along with his point, it is nice to have the state auditor involved as kind of a facilitator so that it really is an opportunity to bring together, I think, the local governments and the labor folks kind of under one direction where there's no confusion about kind of who's coordinating this or where we're going.
Thank you. Questions next?
Mr. Chairman, Grace Kelleher with the School Boards Association. I'm happy to be with you today. I'm here to support the bill. My association has been a part of this from the beginning, and it's a refreshing change to sit next to and have a bill shared here with Education Minnesota. And really, that's the kind of forward thinking we need to look at big issues coming forward, connections, infrastructure, and it just makes sense that these folks can gather and come up to solutions
together. And I applaud it, too, and I think some of the out-of-the-box thinking that's going on here today is your ability to commit resources and pay for it. Or have I misinterpreted your testimony today? I hope not.
Mr. Chairman, I do have to go back to my board and receive their authorization.
I suggest you all go back, particularly by the time we're done with the end of this session and what's facing us in the next one. Next.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and I'll start by first of all introducing myself, Jody Boer with Education Minnesota, my first time in front of this committee, so thank you. And I'll also begin with, I too will go back and have the discussion that you've asked the others to do. I just wanted to go on the record along with the colleagues that are sitting here and say we are very supportive of this, very appreciative of the work that was done, and the manner in which this bill came before you, I think, speaks volumes about the willingness of these groups to cross all of our boundaries and work together. And so your point is well noted. I will go back and ask the same questions as the others will about the finance piece, Mr. Chair.
Yeah,
thank
I wish you would, because the first testifier alluded to the fact that there will be cuts, and there will be cuts. And I think everyone who is testifying here today has complained about the cuts. And I think it's time that folks who have come to us now to produce something that costs money realize it costs money. And you can't complain about the cuts and then ask us to spend money on something else. Next.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll keep my comments brief. My name is Matt Toburin, representing SEIU, and I want to thank you for allowing me to have a moment to testify. I want to thank Representative Swales and Representative McFarland for the way that they've handle this process. It's been a very open and collaborative process, and they've wanted as many voices and people at the table as possible. And we believe they've created a solid piece of legislation moving forward. And we support the legislation and being at the table. But just wanted to say that we do have some concerns that when looking at collaborative governance and shared services, that can mean job losses, and we are just very sensitive to the fact that, especially in these economic times, that we look at shared services and using our resources in the most efficient and effective manner, but also keep in mind the topic of jobs and job loss.
Thank you. Next.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jennifer O'Rourke with the League of Minnesota Cities, or the statewide association. I would just like to echo what everyone else said, and thank you. Thank the authors for bringing this great idea and forum forward, but also you've highlighted some real concerns for us on all levels moving forward with this bill and others.
Well, all of you have highlighted these concerns for us the last three sessions, and particularly this one, so I am just restating what I have been told by members of your organizations in my office for the last 3 years. Do we have anyone else who wishes to testify? Representative McFarland.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to bring forward that there already is in statute that the state auditor does work with state mandates, and a county, town, school district, or statutory home rule charter city may file a written resolution with the state auditor objecting to a state mandate or make recommendations for reforming a state mandate. So it already is in her purview to be doing this.
Representative McFarland, I don't want to go to the next step, but that may beg the question why this bill is before us. But Representative Marquardt. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I commend you for the hard work that you put in. I think that it's wonderful that you've pulled this all together, but I think the fact that you've brought all these people to the table, I too question the need for actually having a bill that says they're going to do this when everybody came to the table and said they were willing to do it. It just seems like it's something that maybe is unnecessary, and if they're all willing to do it, then, you know, could they step forward and say, okay, we're willing to do it even without this? We're not going to get compensated for it. So I just have to have that on the record, I guess.
Representative Biscuits.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Representative Poppy's comments, I'll say ditto. And hopefully, if this bill does not move forward, these groups will still be feeling the love and getting together. Mr. Chair and members, I do have a concern with page 2, lines 27 and 28, the expiration date. Members, I've got in front of me statute 15.059, subdivision 5, and subdivision 5 says that all boards, commissions, committees, councils, and whatnot expire as of June 30th, 2009, unless otherwise written into law. Well, we're creating a new council after 2009, so I'm not quite sure how the mechanics of this work, but what I do know is that the reason for the expiration date is because the number of councils and task force and advisory groups had simply exploded. And so we put in an expiration date so they would come back to the table and justify their existence. And if it is still justified, we would then renew their existence. But now, members of this committee, I think we need to be careful because there may be boilerplate in every new bill creating a new task force, council, or advisory group that says they get to be permanent, whereas others have to stand for scrutiny. I have concern with that language. I think every council, advisory group, and task force should stand for scrutiny on a regular basis.
Representative Swales.
Mr. Chair, yesterday I attended the Senate hearing related to this bill. Senator Rest is carrying it over there. She did have an author's amendment that addressed that very issue, and I imagine that should this go to conference, if it passes through this body, that will be addressed.
Representative Biscuits, does that answer your question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There was no question. It was just a statement, and I like Senator Rest, Mr. Chair.
All right. Further discussion? Anyone else wish to testify? No. Then I'll renew my motion that House File 2307 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. I'm sorry, 2840. I was going down the agenda as I had originally started it, and of course, that didn't happen, so it's 2840. Apologize for that. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
We do have one bill that has been pulled from the agenda. It's House File 1889, Representative Thiessen, Public Employees Authorized to Buy into the State Long-Term Care Insurance Program. So if you're here today for that bill, Representative Thiessen has requested that that bill be pulled. So you may move on to something else. Representative Greiling. Welcome to the committee. I'm going to move that House File 2703 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. Representative Grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a bill that requires the Board of Teaching to conform to the same statutes that we now have for the Department of Education and the Board of School Administrators. Right now they can do whatever they want with rulemaking for licensing of teachers. And this would require that they come, like the other boards, to the legislature to discuss what they want to do before they do it. And I do have an amendment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gradley, I'll move the A1 amendment, and then why don't you tell us what it does before we put it on?
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, Mr. Shepherd's eagle eye found on 1.2 of this amendment that we wanted to conform exactly to the Board of Education, but there was a couple words we needed to insert to make it exactly perfect, and so that's what that is. And then the lines 1.3 through 1.7 just say that we don't want the current rulemaking, which has been very long in coming regarding licensing paraprofessionals, to be interfered with by this bill, so we excuse them from this new statute.
All right. Discussion to the amendment. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Greiling, to your bill is amended.
And thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for amending it as I wish. And I think I did explain the bill. We had testimony in favor of it in the committee. Education Minnesota supports the bill. and they don't need to testify unless you would wish, and I imagine the Board of Teaching would like to comment.
All right. Who's here for the Board of Teaching today? All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Karen Ballmer. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching. And thank you, Representative Greiling, for the opportunity to join you here this morning. Just a couple of comments. We certainly do not disagree in any way with the what we believe is the spirit of Representative Greiling's bill in terms of the transparency that is needed and for an open dialogue regarding the very important policy decisions that the Board of Teaching considers on a routine basis. We have been in the practice of being highly engaged with stakeholders and communicating with legislative members and including them, in fact, in some of our processes along the way. So that needs to be very clear that we do think that transparency is critical. And so we do not disagree at all with that. We believe that our purview under Minnesota Statute 122A09 is limited. It is more limited than the Department of Education's, for example. We have a fairly small scope. We are subject to the Chapter 14, which is the rulemaking chapter, and so we are required by law, even if it wasn't our posture, to be open and engaging to do so in our rulemaking processes. So we philosophically, I think we agree with the intent of this bill. We do have some concerns about the potential ramifications of timelines and timing of some of our work and being subject to legislative timelines. And so I offer that for consideration and whether that there might be an alternative in terms of requiring us to serve written notification prior to initiating rulemaking or something along those lines. So certainly want to be clear that the transparency is not at all in question. And to Representative Greiling's amendment regarding the paraprofessional credential, we held a public hearing actually just yesterday. And so we are enthusiastically pursuing that and hopeful to complete that. So we do support that amendment. And I would certainly stand for any questions.
Discussion. Members. Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifier, to the author, is there a danger? I think the timeline concerns are the ones I've heard about most, is how this may delay action that needs to happen, especially when the legislature is not in session. But I'm concerned specifically about what does this do for Minnesota's application for race to the top, for example?
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The timelines for rulemaking, this committee probably knows better than most in the legislature, are so molasses slow that I don't think we need to worry about that. This this paraprofessional rule has been hanging around waiting to be finalized since, I think, 2003. And then to the race to the top, Representative Szymanski, we did not get it, as you know, but it was the impetus for this bill because the legislature has had great debate and come to consensus on alternative teacher compensation, QCOMP, and decided what the role for test scores would be in teacher evaluation. We've had many discussions on teacher licensure and what the role of test scores should be in that and what the path should be for alternative teacher licensure. And we have a rich QCOMP statute as well as alternative licensure, and we're working in the policy committee at this very minute on making it even better. But to have the Board of Teaching be assigned by an application to do things that went around the legislature and did not abide by our statutes. Statutes are supreme, rules are under the statutes. We are more important than rulemakers in policy decisions. So we ought not to assign a board with appointed people to make rules that could be contrary to our statutes. And I'm not saying Ms. Ballmer would want to do that. She's I think as surprised as I was to see some of the assignments given to the Board of Teaching. But that's what that application did, and that's why I have brought the bill forward, and I'm glad you gave me that opportunity to say that.
Representative Gutwald.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. By the way, it is Representative Gutwald.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. It's early in the morning yet. I'm only halfway through my can of Mountain Dew, so.
Gutwald Szymanski.
I consider it an honor. I don't know if he would, but. Now, the concern is about the time frame. And, you know, do we do this with other rulemaking bodies? They all need to abide by what we do here at the legislature. But I didn't hear the answer as to whether this is, in fact, going to delay our progress towards Race to the Top. Maybe I missed that in your answer somewhere, but is it or isn't it? I recognize the need for legislative oversight as primary. Is this necessary to accomplish that?
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if you'd listen to my testimony, Representative Gottwald, you would notice that I said that this is a rule or a statute already for the Department of Education and the Board of School Administrators. So, yes, to that answer, we do this. And then secondly, as far as the Race to the Top, it's my opinion that part of the reason that we didn't get it is because of this going around the legislature. That's why one of the major reasons that I did not sign a letter of support. It's one of the major reasons that we did not get support from Education Minnesota. And I contend in our next application, we should brag about our current QCOMP. New York and Wisconsin don't have a role for test scores, and we already do. So why did we put in here enhanced QCOMP that makes us have to renegotiate and lose probably some of the places where we already do have QCOMP and it's embraced? And to put in things that go around the legislature for alternative teacher licensure assigned to a board, I just think that created havoc and lessened our chances to get the application in the first place. So I think having this in statute will help us with our next application.
Representative Anderson is next.
My question has been answered, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kiffmeyer, did you have a question?
No, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Any other questions? Seeing no other questions, anyone else you have to testify, Representative Grant?
No,
Mr. Anyone else wish to testify on this? None? Then I'll renew my motion that House File 2307 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the referred to the Finance Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Dabney, we did try to fulfill your request, and you were in another committee.
So I was. My apologies, Mr. Chair.
The consequences are totally yours now. Representative Dabney, I will move that House File 2360 House File 2360 be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. And then I believe you were working, not you necessarily, but most everybody else on the committee, was working on an amendment. Is that amendment ready?
Mr. Chair, I believe members will find in their packets an H-2360A4 amendment that Mr. Gehring was good enough to both research and prepare for me.
All right. And are you agreeable to the amendment, or Representative Kahn, do you want to move this amendment?
Yes, I'd be very pleased to move the amendment.
Representative Kahn moves the amendment. And are you moving it this way or this way?
I'm moving it in the way that we usually read such amendments.
There we go. Representative Kahn, to your amendment. Go ahead, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this it's interesting how a clarifying language in a bill, in a law, charter, whatever it was, proceeds to mess it up, but taking this out really fixes it. You then go to the mathematical definitions of compactness, which Representative Kiffmeyer is very familiar with, because the judicial issue was settled in a court case called Zuckman versus Kiffmeyer. I don't know who won, but I just know that that's where the judicial compactness issue was settled. And so this works fine.
All right. Representative Dabney, are you agreeable to the amendment?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the Kahn amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Dabney, to your bill that is finally amended.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, to bring you back to the original issue in this bill, We are now going to be electing school board members differently in Minneapolis, in part in a hybrid system where three will be elected at large and six will be elected by geographic districts. The school board has never had to participate in the redistricting process previously because they were at large members. They now will need, or I would say should, be at the table when the redistricting decisions are made so that the school district districts have the input of representatives from the school district.
Further discussion? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2360 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
House File 3066, Representative Simon's going to present this bill for Representative Thiessen, who has other commitments. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I will move that House File 3066 be recommended passed and referred to the Committee on Finance.
All right. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm here in place of Representative Thiessen. It's his bill. We're here primarily on Section 2 of the bill, which creates a new entity, a new panel. And this bill arose out of some recommendations from the Department of Health. You should have a letter in your packets. This is an administration proposal, or it grew out of an administration proposal, to analyze how health plans report their administrative expenses. And apparently, and I'm no expert, but apparently there is a need to do more of an apples-to-apples comparison. And to do that, the department believes, and Representative Thiessen believes, that we should form this new panel that's in Section 2 of the bill. You can read it for yourself about who's on it and the duration and so forth, but that's primarily the reason that it's here. I understand that there are two amendments in the packet that Representative Thiessen wishes to have on the bill. So, Mr. Chair, if it's okay, we could take up the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment. You're moving the A2 amendment.
I'll move the A2 amendment, Mr. Chair. And my understanding, even though this pertains to Section 1, which is not primarily the section that we're concerned with, that Representative Thiessen would like the amendment made, it simply includes information on administrative expenses for dental services, which was an oversight.
All right. Any discussion to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
And then, Mr. Chair, the A3 amendment, I understand that Mr. Thiessen, working with Mr. Shepherd, discovered that this is language that should be in there that's often in statute with respect to other similar panels that are created, and that was just left off the first draft. That's right, the A3 amendment.
Representative Simon moves the A3 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
So, members, it's pretty self-explanatory. Section 2 just deals with the membership and the makeup and the duties of this panel. Again, this originally grew out of a Department of Health initiative, and Representative Thiessen is carrying the bill.
All right. Any discussion? Representative Gobel.
Well, Mr. Chair, as we blast through these bills, it might be good to have a little bit of conversation about what is going on in them. One of the concerns that I have, and it's too bad Representative Thiessen isn't here to respond to some of this, is we seem to be going after a specific entity or group of entities, which, granted, are regulated by the state of Minnesota, so that's appropriate. But when we're putting together a panel to look at administrative costs for one set of entities providing health care coverage, it really ought to be something that looks at administrative costs for all types of health care coverage, including state public programs, I might add. It might be good to look at that approach rather than singling out HMOs. I also understand, and I don't know if the HMOs are here to testify on this bill or not, but every time we do these kinds of things, we add additional administrative expenses to do this kind of thing as well. And I wonder if anybody is here from the HMOs to comment on whether this is already being done, whether reports are already being provided to the state, and whether we're in fact adding expense to our health care system that are unnecessary.
Representative Simon, do you know if there's anyone here that wishes to testify to that?
Mr. Chair, I don't know that. I was told by Representative Thiessen and in the prior committee or committees there were no testifiers. It was just Representative Thiessen. Obviously, I don't have the breadth of his knowledge about it. So if there's anyone here who wishes to testify who was maybe at those prior hearings, that's okay. But the way he described it to me, and obviously we're getting it secondhand, is you're right, Representative Gottwald, this only takes one piece of it. But the Department of Health recommendations were that this one piece of it does need some more adjusting so that there's a more of an apples-to-apples comparison. It applies to both health plans, HMOs, and to county-based purchasing units as well. So it's admittedly narrow in its scope, but that was the intention of the department.
Representative Calhoun.
Well, I guess for the record, Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, HMOs are already reporting administrative expenses. That information is posted on the Department of Health's website, and so I'm at a bit of a loss to understand what we're doing here. There's a certain level of transparency already in existence, and is this kind of a witch hunt? That's my concern.
And as Representative Simon said, the focus of this committee is a rather narrow part of the bill, but it's a point well taken. Representative Simon, anyone else wish to testify that you know? Any further discussion? All right, Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, I just ask for your support. I think the point is well taken. Representative Gottwald, if you have other questions, to take it up with Representative Thiessen. He apologizes, by the way. There was just a schedule conflict that he couldn't reconcile, another commitment that he had. But I ask for your support, and I'll renew my motion that House File 3066 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay? Motion prevails.
All right, House File 3096, Representative Pawlowski.
Members of the committee, I'm going to move that House File 3096, which we had before the committee yesterday, and was laid over because of a delete everything amendment, be recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the general register. And we're working off the amendment that was adopted yesterday. And one of the reasons why it was laid over was because there was an ongoing discussion with the Senate and making sure that the bill conformed to what was going on in the Senate. So I'm going to move the A1 amendment. The A1 amendment would put it at least closely in line with what is in the Senate. So I would like to have the A1 amendment, Madam Chair, put onto the bill. I'll move the A1 amendment.
All right. Is there any discussion? All those in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
Thank you. I have one more amendment, and I think Mr. Shepherd, this amendment does not have a number on it, and it came to us this morning. I believe that this amendment is also something that was added in the Senate yesterday, I'm told, and if one of the advocates or the department could come on down. Members, the amendments that are being added and what we're doing here, I've got the department and the advocates, and I'm hopeful that they're going to tell me that both are in agreement with this amendment. So, Madam Chair, I'm going to turn it over to one or the other or both.
Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, Tom Johnson. I represent the organization MACRO, which is the umbrella association for the nonprofit organizations that provide services to the severely disabled so they can have employment. And, yes, both the advocates and the department are in agreement with this language.
All right. And, Mr. Rhodes, you...
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration, that is correct.
Madam Chair, I'm going to move the amendment, but it doesn't have a number on it.
It was just distributed to everyone, so I believe everyone has it. Is there any discussion? Okay, all in favor of the amendment that was just distributed, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay.
All right, members, the bill is in order, and we did discuss this yesterday. We can further discuss it. It comes to us as a result of current law and articulating current law so that the department can actually, and we're looking at really line 1.15, keep track of this percentage and then the areas of that percentage that are used by the various entities, occupational rehabilitation centers, home and community options, DACs, and that we would understand that they are fulfilling the intent of the law. And again, we can have the department and the advocates testify to that.
Are there any questions for testifiers or for the author? Yes, Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the author, Representative Pawlowski. The intent of this bill, I think, is great. I've talked with some of the supporters of the bill, and I work for a company that employs a great number of people with disabilities and other challenges. My question is, why are we mandating for this specific set? Why don't we mandate more broadly? Is there a need to mandate this?
Representative, I'm going to let the advocates address that. That was a question we had discussed at some length in my office, too.
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, Tom Johnson. We have two other organizations I should announce that are supportive of this and have worked on the development, the Minnesota Habilitation Coalition, MHC, and MNDACA. We have representatives from three different organizations here today, one from Winona, one from Thief River Falls, and one from Minneapolis. For some period of time, back actually going back to the 1930s, federal law has required federal agencies to contract for services with people with disabilities. Similarly, counties do it, state and local governments do it. The state has lagged actually behind. The policies that you've passed have been quite good in terms of encouraging use of people with disabilities in state services when those are contracted out or for purchasing goods. But we've never tracked that within the state, and the data that we have would certainly indicate that the state lags considerably behind the federal government and local government in the use of persons with disabilities in either providing services or purchasing goods from organizations where those that employ people with severe disabilities. So this is in an effort to bring the implementation up with policy that already exists. The state and the Department of Employment and Economic Development advocate for private employers to employ people with disabilities whenever possible. The state needs to be a model of that. The private employers within the state, when the economy at least is good, do a good job. Right now, when the employment or economy is bad, jobs for people with severe disabilities with private employers also lags. And for the state then to reach its previous commitment that it has made to people with disabilities and vis-a-vis contracting is very important at this point in time, but important generally, but particularly important at this point.
Representative Gottwald.
Just a real quick follow-up, Madam Chair, and really two questions. One is there a magic, why 19%? Is that an arbitrary number, or is that number meant to match what's being done at the federal level or other levels? And then, again, the question, why are we being so specific about janitorial services, document imaging, mail collating, sorting services, and the document shredding that's been added here with the amendment? Why not allow for the state to do this with a variety of jobs, even beyond that?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, as an advocate, we would certainly be supportive of that. What we're most interested now, however, is to get the implementation up to this level within these services. And I think we can revisit both that 19% number, which is there is no magic attached to it, and the scope of services that persons with disability should be providing. But right now, expanding the services into these areas will be very helpful, one, and two, tracking what we are doing in terms of complying with current law is also very important.
Madam Chair, Representative Gottwald, when this initial bill was brought to me, I asked for research to be done where it came from. And it came from an insertion in a conference committee where there was no public testimony. And subsequently, the department really had little or no direction as to how to implement it. So what you've seen going on for about the last month is working with the department to make sure that the department could actually implement what was put in the conference committee. And this is one of the ongoing problems that we've had in the legislature, inserting something in a conference committee without public testimony and then wondering why it isn't being implemented because the department really didn't know how to implement it. So hopefully the language before you today will allow the department to implement it, and we'll be able to track at least what's here and make sure it works. That's about as simple as it is. And that took over a month of negotiation. That's why we should have things done in committee with public testimony, and everyone should know what we're going to do.
Any other comments? No. Any other questions? Representative Pawlowski.
I'll renew my motion, Madam Chair, that House File 3096, as amended, be recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed say nay. The bill as amended has passed. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dietrich, I will move that House File 3475 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Finance Committee. Or be referred to the Finance Committee.
Hi. Mr. Chairman, would that go to Finance or K-12 Finance?
It will. It has to go to Finance first to be referred to the Finance Committees.
Thank you.
And I could repeat Representative Carlson's phrase, but repeating it, it doesn't sound appropriate in public. Representative Dietrich,
thank you,
to
Mr.
your bill.
Chairman. Yes. Mr. Chairman, since this is the Government Operations Committee, I am not going to go into detail of what school trust lands are, where they're located, or how schools earn money from school trust lands. What I would like to remind the committee, though, is that the school trust lands are intended to generate revenue for school districts of the state according to the state constitution, and this has been so since statehood. The state, us legislators, we are the trustees of that trust. It is our responsibility to act in the best interest of the beneficiaries of our schools, and this bill helps us do that. This bill creates an independent agency as of July 1st, 2013, separate from the DNR, to administer and manage Minnesota's permanent school fund lands. The proposal that I have before you, this is modeled after, very closely after, a Utah agency that was created in the early 1990s. This agency was facing some of the questions, issues, problems that we are facing right now, some of us are facing in response to our school trust lands and how they are managed. This new agency is governed by a board of trustees that is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate, whose names are forwarded on by a nominating committee. The trustees are explicitly charged with managing the lands and revenues generated from the lands in the most prudent and profitable manner possible, not for any other purpose, but for the interest of the school trust fund lands, or the school trust fund. The new agency may contract with public or private parties for day-to-day management of the school permanent school fund lands. This Utah model that I referred to earlier, and this is replicated after, has been proven highly successful in the state of Utah. And as I mentioned, they were facing some of the same questions, issues that we are looking at right now. When the lands manager, Kevin Carter, took over the school trust lands, there was almost $100 million in the school trust lands fund. The education community was disappointed in that fund and the amount that was in that fund, and they thought that the lands could be managed more like a business and generate more revenue to the schools. Well, they were right. Today, the Utah School Trust Fund has now tipped the $1 billion mark under this new management model. This model will allow, in this bill that I've introduced here, will allow the legislature to better fulfill its trust obligations by having a lands manager who can have undivided loyalties to the beneficiaries of this state, and that means the school children and the schools of this state. And Mr. Chairman, as far as the details of the bill, I would appreciate it if Mark Shepherd could go through.
Yeah, Representative Dietrich, I just have one question.
Sure.
It's in reference to your second author, Representative Rukavina.
Yeah.
This has been an issue that Representative Rukavina has taken very close to his heart, and we hear from him quite often on this issue. Mm-hmm. He's the second author. This is going to finance. He's on finance. Is he supportive of the bill?
Extremely.
Good. Mr. Shepherd.
Mr. Chair, members, I would just point out that probably the sections that may be of most interest to this committee would be Section 13 on the governance establishing the permanent school trust fund, land administration with the Board of Trustees, and then assigning a nominating committee for the Board of Trustees, and the material after that assigns the duties of the board and specifies their administrative responsibilities. There's a provision for a director on page 10, section 15, and authority of the director following that on pages 10 and 11.
Representative Dietrich.
Mr. Chairman, right now I'd like to I think that it's really important that we hear from our education community, because this bill is not the result of just me thinking that this is a good idea. Our education community has many questions, comments, and concerns about our school trust lands and how they are managed, and are we generating the amount of revenue that we should be generating off of our school trust lands. So I would like to call on Grace Kelleher to comment on the bill.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent school board members from around the state. We are here today to be extremely in favor of this change in management for the school trust fund lands. Our members get especially excited when we see additional dollars in K-12 that they don't have to raise taxes to get. So by making sure this fund is successful, it's actually an investment not only today, but for the next 100 years in Minnesota education. Present management, even through heroic efforts by Representative Dietrich to make it very clear that management needs to be efficient and effective with both short-term and long-term goals in sight, the DNR has yet to come to the table and justify that. In fact, there was, and I'll let Representative Dietrich share it, but they asked for just clearly what contracts are out there on school trust fund lands. We got a bunch of numbers gobbledygook back, often with categories considering 40 as one. The DNR has managed hunting cabins through the school trust fund lands. They manage 122 hunting cabins, and the average $138 a year to rent a hunting cabin through the school trust fund lands. Also, the DNR manages 3.5 million acres of mineral rights in this state. The actual lease of acres for minerals is 34,129. And Mr. Chairman, last but not least, the DNR this last year, who manages 2.5 million acres of our state woods, netted into the school permanent school trust fund only $100,000. The rest of the earned money was taken out for DNR costs. Members, this is a good bill, a thoughtful bill, and truly an asset for K-12 going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hope my questions are not in any way perceived to be in support of the Minnesota DNR. The first question I have is one of process. Is there this is the first stop for this bill?
Yes.
Representative Winkler, yes, it is.
I guess, Mr. Chair, and to Representative Dietrich, does it not need to go to one of the environmental policy committees?
Representative Winkler, it's going to finance. It can be redirected. When it goes to finance, both to education and finance, and if it would need to go to environmental finance because of the fund issue with the DNR, it probably would.
Mr. Chair, I guess my question is more specific to the Environmental Policy Committee, which is a separate standalone committee.
Representative Dietrich, have you checked on that issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a side note, on Monday, two people from Utah are coming to talk to K-12 finance in regards to this bill and the model that we are proposing. And we have invited environment finance to that meeting. And we have made many efforts to involve the environment committees in trying to get briefed on what model we are proposing.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, and I guess the question to Representative Dietrich is, it sounds like what you're intending to do with this independent agency is to create a fiduciary obligation that this agency would essentially have to the beneficiaries of this trust, the kids in the school. Is there existing obligation, fiduciary obligation, described for the DNR in statute, or has this been disregarded, or have we never been explicit about that?
Representative Dietrich.
The DNR right now is acting as the trust, the trustee for the state of Minnesota, because we have asked them to manage the school trust lands. But they still have that same fiduciary obligation. There are some people that believe, and this is an ongoing discussion for now 3 years, is the DNR has a very independent, narrow focus: conservation, environmental issues. And so the question is when the DNR has that mission, vision from us, are they able to manage 3.5 million acres of land for the school trust lands that have a very different purpose according to the Constitution? And I think the DNR would probably be the first to admit land sales, land swaps, they have been on their agenda for 15, 20 years. But it is very difficult without having one agency, one lands director with a single focus to be directed at those issues and to make progress on them day after day after day after day. And I'll just point to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area as an example. We have 86,000 school trust land acres in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. Not one acre of those is generating money to the school trust lands. The DNR can bring forth a proposal, then it hits obstacles with us. We need somebody who is an advocate for the schools and understands the needs of our the environment and the land in the state of Minnesota to be working diligently and focused, efficiently and effectively every day, day after day, in order to maximize the revenues that go to the schools.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, so I understand what you're trying to do, and I understand the goal, but who's actually going to be, you're going to have a agency, who's going to be making decisions and setting direction and so forth? What about active land management? Who's actually going to be carrying out those duties?
Representative.
There will be a land manager, and the land manager will be appointed by a board of directors. And this model was meant to act more as a business. This board of directors will set out the goals and evaluate the land manager and the performance of the land manager. In other words, the performance of the lands.
Representative Winkler?
That's all for now, Mr. Chair.
All right. I've got a long list here. Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, I salute the goal. I was on the Education Committee when we discussed this before. I think it's frankly deplorable, the amount of money we're generating off of so many acres for our schools. That's what it's intended to accomplish. So I salute the goal. My question is about the means. Having a land manager, and maybe this could be accomplished, I don't want to disrespect the research you've done into the Utah model, but this strikes me as creating a rather large bureaucratic solution to a problem that really requires more focus. We already know what these lands are supposed to be managed for. We clearly need somebody who's focused on managing them for that end result. Could that be done another way? Could this be a position with specific statutory direction and reporting requirements that either resides in or outside of the DNR? I think you're absolutely right that the DNR has a conflicted mission that prevents it from doing the kind of job that we wish it was doing with these lands. But to create a 7-member board, and I suspect that the reason we have a July 1, 2013 implementation date here is that it's got a massive fiscal note. I don't know if we've got one yet or not, and this isn't a finance committee, but I wonder if we're creating too much bureaucracy when something simpler could accomplish a lot of results.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you. First of all, is this solution is the result is also a reaction to the legislative auditor's report. Like I said, for many years, people have been recommending some sort of a lands manager. You need to have one person who is more narrowly focused on the mission of school trust lands. And so this bill does that. We tried 3 years ago. What we did was we named the commissioner of the DNR as that one person. Well, they are not narrowly focused. They are pulled in so many different directions, and it is very difficult to achieve that mission. So we've tried other options first. And as far as a fiscal note and bureaucracy, I think this is actually quite simple. I think it's the way a business or a corporation is done. You have a CEO, and then you have a board that oversees them and evaluates their performance and looks at the results. And so I think this is actually quite simple. Fiscal note, this agency will be paid for by the school trust lands, but first, if any of you thinking that this might be redundant, then I want to reassure you this is not. This is right now the DNR is collecting from the school it can certify all costs working on school trust lands before it gets to the permanent school fund. So what this is exactly what you just said. It is narrowly focused. It is having one person responsible. We as legislators are also responsible for this fund. And I don't know, it makes it very impossible for us to be accountable to the public and to our schools without having one person who is responsible for the performance of these lands.
Representative Gubbin.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Representative Dietrich, please don't misunderstand me. I support the goal of this legislation. You raised the corporate example. I happen to work for a company that is structured and owns land. We do not have the CEO with a board of directors responsible for the land. We have a person within the organization, one person who is accountable to the CEO and the board of directors for making sure that they manage our real estate correctly. That's the model I'm looking at more than creating something this large. So I agree with your idea of having one person who is assigned to deal with this. That's a great idea, but that isn't what this bill does. It creates one person and a board of directors and bureaucracy on top of it. And I don't know that that's necessarily the most efficient solution. I think that there is a way that we could have a person dedicated somewhere in state government who would be directly accountable for producing results and who would not be conflicted with the DNR's many responsibilities and focuses. So that's where I disagree with this bill. It isn't that I don't think we shouldn't manage it better. It's that I don't think we need a massive board of directors and the bureaucracy that goes with this. And I would be interested in hearing why we're implementing this July 1 of 2013 and not, you know, January 1 of 2011.
Representative Dietrich, you want to respond to that? Then we've got six people that have questions. So, Representative Dietrich.
My personal preference would be tomorrow to implement this bill. I think we can't, I don't think we should be waiting. And on your idea of bureaucracy and my idea of bureaucracy versus simplification and accountability and efficiency and effectiveness is just, we're just going to have to disagree.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, a couple of items. Number one, on page 4, line 27, I think is illustrative of the antiquity of the work that we do. If you were selling land in the best intention of settlers, I think that's kind of interesting. But Mr. Chair and members of this committee, anyway, I do have a concern with page 9, lines 3 and 4, and the broad sweeping rulemaking authority that we are giving here without legislative oversight. If if you look at section 19 of the bill, page 12, line 14, the control of all forest and mineral management on school trust lands is vested with the board. And now you couple that with the rulemaking authority we are giving to the director. The director may make rules as approved by the board without any restraint at all. I think we're giving up a little too much of what should be in the legislative purview.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just like to point out that within the language of this bill is always the balance. And, for example, on page 12, line 20, and it says, so long as the contract requires strict adherence to trust management principles. And I think we always have to go back to the original mission of the school trust lands, is that it is set up, we are in a trust, and we are the trustees, and the schools are the beneficiaries, and who is accountable and responsible? And we all are. And so I just think we need to just keep going back to that.
All right. Representative Sterner.
Yes, thank you, Chair Pawlowski, and Representative Dietrich. I just had a question as far as revenue coming from the land. Are there any intention of maybe using some of the independent banks around the state of Minnesota where to put the assets that come from the land management?
Representative Dietrich, do you want to comment on turning over any of this to banks, considering recent history?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not at this time. Thank you.
All right. Representative Sterner, do you have anything else?
No, thank you.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. On page 8, lines 16 through 18, to the author, you correctly, I think, reminded the committee that there are lands within the Boundary Waters Canoe Area that are school lands. And so I was wondering if any environmental groups have been consulted about this. You mentioned that the DNR would appoint some representatives from environmental groups of their choosing, of the DNR's choosing, to be on the commission. But have they been consulted about what you plan to do here?
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In regards to the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, there has been a subcommittee, Boundary Waters Canoe Area subcommittee meeting for the full year of 2009, and we have made recommendations to the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee and we have a resolution that was in the Environment Policy Committee that would that we would proceed with working with the federal government on selling the land in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area. The environmental groups have been in the room all of the time. The environmental groups, right now the oversight committee for the legislature is the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee. Right now I am the chair, just took over the chair from Senator Wieger, and we have been meeting more than that committee has ever met in its 20-year history. And so those are open meetings. We discuss all of these issues, but in this particular bill right now, no, it's just I am a legislator who has introduced a bill through the normal process. But we have had, this has been an ongoing discussion really for 3 years, so it isn't like a huge surprise.
Representative Horns.
So, Mr. Chair and Representative Dietrich, so in other words, they haven't necessarily, they're in the room, but they haven't necessarily been consulted about this bill, is I guess what I understand from your answer. So just one more quick question, Mr. Chair. So on page 9, line 10, I don't profess to be a grizzled veteran of this body, but I've never seen the I knew I'd get a rise out of people on that, but I've never seen the terms reflect undivided loyalty as a criteria for being on a commission. So I'm disturbed by that. I don't know what that means exactly, but do you have any comments about that, Representative Dietrich? And if there are grizzled veterans that have seen this in statute, please let me know. But I'm disturbed by it.
Representative Dietrich to the representative who is grizzled but not a veteran.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given the long history of the school trust lands, we feel like we have allowed the DNR to, and I mean that sincerely, we have given the DNR management responsibilities. There are many people who feel like they cannot truly fulfill their trust obligations because of a divided loyalty. And so, but in trust law, it is very clear that the trustee must have undivided loyalty, and so to the beneficiaries, and so that is the reason for that language. It is actually, at least for my rookie experience, it is very common law words in trust law.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Kahn.
Yes. Mr. Chairman and members, I have a lot of problems with the language on 9.3 to 9.4. When I chaired this committee, which was a long time ago, one of the things, as a grizzled veteran of chairing this committee, one of the things that we were very careful about, one of the things that we went through the statute, stripping out wherever it occurred, was rulemaking authority that was not really specific. We always put specific clauses as to what the rules would do. There were rules, there was authority, something like the Department of Health, saying that the Department of Health shall make rules according to Chapter 14 consistent with good health or something like that. I think we've taken all of these out, and now I see one coming back in, and I think this before this moves out of this committee, Mr. Chairman, I think this needs very specific language as to what the rulemaking authority should include. And I'll point out it's really a horrendous day when I think twice in within an hour I've agreed with Representative Biskins. Something is really bad happening when that's happening. And since he says it first, it's, you know, not even him coming over to my viewpoint. It's me going to his. But the so I think that seriously needs to be fixed up. I hope we've never let any bills out of this committee with that kind of broad rulemaking
Representative
authority.
Representative kind of, if you're serious, we could lay it over until Tuesday, and members could prepare amendments. There is broad making rulemaking in this, and it is cutting new ground, which is a bad pun, but we could do that. So,
well,
and your shameless attempts to get to be Representative Emmer's Lieutenant Governor are not.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Kahn,
particularly if we're going to lay it over some other things, which this is the thing that Representative Hornstein touched on, which really bothered me too, is that when you look at how you're nominating the people, you get the names just come from the timber industry, they just come from the mining industry, and they're, you know, four, and then you get just one person from the statewide wildlife and conservation organizations, one person, and that they don't even get to submit that name. That goes through the Department of Natural Resources. So I think that's, you know, I don't know how you want to do it, but whatever you want to do it, the direction should, you know, it should be the same and should be a little bit more balanced in the numbers of members and in the how they go.
Right.
But I'm much more concerned about the rulemaking, and I'd love to see the statutes. I'd love to see the trust law, since I'm obviously not an expert
Representative,
on undivided
Representative
loyalty.
Representative point is well taken, as is Representative Winkler's and Representative Hornstein's point on other related issues with this bill. Representative Dietrich, I'm going to lay the bill over, but I would prefer on Tuesday that we have written amendments ready to go, and we're not going to be telling staff as they walk into the room to draft an amendment, but they'll be drafted and also to work with the author of the bill, so that she's aware of these amendments and what they'll do. So with that, Representative Dietrich, I'm just going to lay the bill over, and we'll get you back up on Tuesday.
Okay, thank
All
you,
right.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 3468 be recommended to pass and be placed in the General Register.
Representative Poppy, to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm actually going to turn it right over to Kent Sulem from the Townships Association. Right,
welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Kent Sulem with the Minnesota Association of Townships. This is a very short technical bill that just cleans up outdated township language as to who signs the minutes from the annual meeting, and as most of you are aware, that occurred on Tuesday. It was annual meeting night this year. it was brought to our attention that it contains provisions that can no longer be followed regarding judges signing the minutes, and this replaces it with the town clerk and the moderator, who are the ones who actually run the meeting. So I hope with that, this will complete the hat trick with the bill that Representative Biskins and Representative Kahn can agree with.
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I hate to do a little bit more than agree with it. Can't this go to the consent calendar?
Representative Kahn, and this is, of course, up to Representative Poppy, but the consent calendar bills have been, shall we say, problematic. And if we have...
What?
Well, Representative Kahn, my suggestion to members is if you put it on the consent calendar and we get into the problems we've had with consent calendar bills, it doesn't take much to move them off the consent calendar and you're one step away from passage. But if a member wishes to go down that route and then be diverted, that's up to the member.
Mr. Chairman, but what they get diverted to is just the general register, so they don't get to any worse than they were in the first place. Oh, I don't care.
Kahn, Representative Poppy, it's up to you. It's your motion.
I believe if I had, this was introduced just as last week, if I had some authors who previously had been on some township law with me, Representative Biskins, Representative Kiffmeyer, if they are in agreement to the consent calendar, I would be in agreement to do that.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would be in agreement to it.
Representative Biskins, you want to weigh in on the consent
Mr. Chair, I would have to agree with you that, you know, it's a while before it gets there, and you never know what could happen.
I think I'll leave it
Poppy,
as...
Remember what this could open up.
I'll leave it as is. Yeah. To the general register.
All right. Wise decision. Ungrizzled veteran. further discussion. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Poppy.
Thank you. I renew my motion.
All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you.
We have one more bill, and we probably will go beyond our time, but session does start at 10:30. So with that, Representative Abler, would it be helpful if I moved House File 1503, be recommended to pass, and be re-referred to the Finance Committee?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the motion would be in order.
I believe it would be also helpful.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, I'll move it.
And it's going to finance, is that what you said?
It's going to finance.
And then there's an amendment, it would be helpful if the Chair could move the A3 amendment, which will conform this bill to what the nursing...
All right, we're going to pass it out. I'll move the A3 amendment, and while it's being passed out, why don't you explain what it is?
And Mr. Chair, testimony is extremely brief at the request of the Chair. This amendment deletes three parts from the bill which have to do with, this is under the nursing board, this massage registration. The nursing board doesn't do these things, and to keep it more consistent with what they're doing, we're deleting some background check disqualification from registration provisions and some access to medical records during disciplinary action. So it makes the bill shorter.
So this is a rather significant amendment. I mean, it does take whole sections of the bill out and
makes it
changes the bill.
Yes.
All right. Discussion to the A3 amendment. And I know members are just getting it, but seeing no discussion, all those in favor of the A3 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. You don't even have the amendment, do you?
The amendment.
Sorry about that. All right. We'll slow down.
I can't find the bill.
Representative Abler, now that...
Oh, here it is.
Representative Gutwald's got it. Why don't you just repeat one more time what this does?
This conforms the background checks and the disqualification and investigation procedures to be more consistent with what the host board is doing, which is the nursing board.
Mr. Chair?
All right, Representative Horns.
A point of parliamentary inquiry, I suppose.
Go ahead, Representative Horns.
If we're, Mr. Chair, inserting language about background checks, et cetera, is that something that the Public Safety Committee would need to look at?
Representative Hornstein, I think one of the reasons the amendment's here is to your question. So, Representative Abler?
Well, this actually takes out language that goes above and beyond what the nursing board does now. In the enthusiasm of the drafting process, they want to leave no stone unturned, and they unturned a few too many. So this actually simplifies the process to be, it doesn't add any language, it takes language out. above and beyond.
Representative Hornstein, I think the intent of the author was to avoid going to those committees by adopting this amendment. I'm not speaking for the author, right, but I believe that was part of the reason for
that. That is a consequence of this, but also they're unnecessary.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, that's okay. It's a good question. Mr. Representative Hale.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that I understand really clearly. You may have just said this, but we're, by retaining the status quo of all folks who are under the nursing board related to background checks, there are still background checks that what happens now? Like, what is the status quo of applicants to the nursing board today?
Representative Abel.
I don't know the exact status quo, but I know this goes beyond what any board does. And so we're just making it the same as average. Okay. They're going to do their normal procedures.
Representative Kalin?
Well, Mr. Chair, I just would imagine that they're treated the same way. I serve on the, as an ex officio on the EMS regulatory board, and those licenses are very thoroughly checked. And I just want to, my sense is that we're following that same procedure, and I think it's a very appropriate level of oversight and or of background checks. So thank you.
I agree.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe this is covered in some other way, but it's a little bit uncertain by removing on page 7 the lines 12 through 17. In folks that met with me, this seemed to be one of the reasons why they wanted, you know, they wanted this language to make sure that folks in this kind of, in this massage therapy, this was a point here that I thought that this is what they wanted in the bill, so I'm a little bit confused by why now is it being stricken.
Representative Abler.
Mr. Chair, no other board has this list, and so it didn't make sense to have this very low credential group have a much higher bar than the average chiropractor, medical doctor, nurse, psychologist, et cetera.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And certainly I've listened to the, I've read lots of emails on the subject. And the question that I also heard was, why is this, since massage therapy, you know, is this determined then to be a medical activity since it's under a medical board? Just a question.
Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to answer all the questions of that. Those questions were dealt with in the health parts were dealt with in a different committee. I'll answer that in a minute. But the main reason the bill is here is about the advisory board and the governance. But the decision that it came up in the licensing division about the health activity or not, and this is a very, this isn't brain surgery, but it is considered to be, and by me, to be a health activity, and enhancing health benefits, which is why it was put under the licensing, the nurses board compared to the cosmetology board or some other place, and that was discussed with some bigger, actually, in the licensing subcommittee, and it was decided that it could go into the nursing board because by at least by a vote, it was deemed to be a health activity.
Representative Abel, I agree with you that there are some narrow functions to the bill. However, the amendment that we just put on at the request of the author is the motion that we had before the body before it was adopted, and she's asking for clarification.
Oh, that's fine. I'm happy to.
We'll handle questions on this. Representative Gutwald, and then we'll go to Representative Brown. Representative Gutwald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I've been want to say several times during this session comments about bills looking for problems. Licensing is meant to protect consumers. So is there a protection issue here? Have there been abuses without the licensing that we're trying to overcome with the licensure? That would seem to be the justification for doing this kind of thing. So,
Representative Abel.
And sure, I'll revert to my testimony on the bill. I thought you were short of time, so I'm just that's the only reason I'm hedging. The reason that this bill is in existence is because the treatment of this profession has been that of controlling prostitution. And all the business licenses and non-credentialing, they don't have any credential at all to work in a city. And some cities regulate it heavily. Minneapolis does nothing. One city has a charge of $8,300 for its business license, and some require bricks and mortar, some require nothing at all. And so if a person would seek to be a massage therapist, one individual came to me, has a credential in Lakeville and in Lakefield Egan and can't, and he pays $425 for those two, but can't work in Bloomington because he had a corporation to do shoulder things because he hasn't got bricks and mortar. And so this bill creates a registration that's voluntary. If you choose to and do it, then you can go from city to city, and those city rules are superseded. And so that's the practical part for the credential lent. And on behalf of the clients who seek this, some people want to know who they're hiring, and there is no credential at all for a massage therapist. You actually qualify to be a massage therapist, whether you're good or not. And in Minneapolis, you would need no credential at all to hang up a shingle saying that's what you do. And some people like that. Some people actually want to have know that their person has been trained and has liability and is overseen. And what this creates is a credential that can be taken away if you infract. And so that's the safety part. I'm trying to say it short, but I hope that's thorough enough to help the committee.
All right. Members, we've got some testifiers. Representative Khan, you're next.
Usually with a bill, when there's a repealer, we see what's being repealed. So I just...
Mr. Shepard, can you tell us what's being repealed?
Mr. Chair and members, there's a repealer in the bill of a rule. This was actually... Representative Abler, I may want to respond.
Oh, thank you.
Representative Abler.
I forgot that was on this bill. Last year we passed a bill where we took a rule and put it in statute for the chiropractic board. And it was the repealer of that rule was neglected. And this is purely technical. It just, instead, the rule is in statute with some changes, and this repeals the old rule that is almost identical to the new statute. It was left out in conference.
Representative Kale.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, you're sure you're not repealing your own chiropractic license?
Representative Abler.
It would be helpful. It would not be helpful.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, let's start with the testifiers. And remember, we have session at 10:30. We will be done before 10:30. We will be taking a vote. So welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, good morning. My name is Jeremy Miller. I've been a professional massage therapist since 1997. I work at Abbott Northwestern Hospital in the Department of Integrated Medicine. I'm the chair of the Alliance for Licensing Massage Therapists, with hundreds of not just massage therapists, but also clients, employers, small business owners, and other healthcare providers. I appreciate the opportunity to come before your committee, and I'll keep my comments brief. House File 1503 before you establishes a voluntary massage therapy credential through an advisory council under the Minnesota Board of Nursing. We approach the Board of Nursing because there is not only shared training, nurses are all standardly trained in massage technique, but in fact there are enough nurses who are also fully trained massage therapists to warrant a nurse massage therapist professional association. The language of the advisory council provisions was modeled after other professional regulations in Minnesota with an advisory council, and is up to the Board of Nursing specifications, who, with no interest beyond fulfilling their mission of public protection, voted unanimously in December of 2009 to take on this advisory council. I encourage you to vote yes on House File 1503, and I'm happy to stand for questions.
Questions? Seeing none, then next I have Catherine Burt. Yeah, Representative Abel. Did you have a question or no?
No, it wouldn't be helpful, Mr. Chair.
You can pick an order, and whoever wants to be first, come on up and identify yourself for the record, and then we'll just go to the next. Well, so welcome to the committee.
Okay.
And
okay.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carrie Johnson-Palava, and I am director of Centerpoint Massage and Shiatsu Therapy School and Clinic, and I am representing the national organization, AOBTA, the American Organization of Bodywork Therapies of Asia. My school, Centerpoint, is the oldest and potentially largest school here in Minnesota. We've been training massage therapists since 1985 and shiatsu therapists since 1992. I represent over 1,400 graduates and professionals who are working in Minnesota. Our programs range from 700 to 1,300 hours. The history of the legislative, I need to talk to you a little bit about the history. I've worked pro-legislatively. I've my business partner and myself started the first coalition for the regulation of massage therapy in Minnesota in 1991. We worked from 1991 through 2008 unsuccessfully, but with a dual modality bill to regulate both massage therapy and Asian bodywork therapy. Asian bodywork therapy has different educational requirements, very similar scope. We touch, we press, we knead, we do many of the same things, but with a different educational foundation and intent. We have a separate title. We're Asian bodywork therapists. In 2008, new people came into the coalition, and there seemed to be a secret meeting which summarily removed and deleted Asian bodywork therapy from the effort, and we weren't even told. We found it out through emails that were going to other people. We tried to reestablish collaboration to no avail. I really want to support good regulation of therapeutic bodywork in Minnesota. We need it. It's important. We want to move into the world of healthcare, absolutely. But we also need inclusivity of Asian bodywork therapy. There's many hundreds of therapists who practice shiatsu massage, acupressure, Asian bodywork therapy. Many hundreds also practice both Asian bodywork therapy and massage. I've been told, we'll go for two separate bills. Go for your own bill. Well, then people who practice bodywork in Minnesota would need to be regulated under two bills, and if there's eventually two licenses, then they need to do two licenses to do massage with one client. I've worked with Representative Abler. He did a great service to us by eliminating moxibustion from the bill. I won't go into that in detail, but we really are appreciative of that amendment early on. Thank you. And I want to come here and support the bill. I just cannot support it in its current form. Included are four things that need to be included, and they seem to be simple amendments. I'm being told, no, they're not simple. But it seems like including the definition of Asian bodywork therapy, which is about two sentences or three sentences. The scope doesn't even need to be expanded much because we do very similar things. But we need representation on the advisory board for one person, one professional member who has studied a minimum of 500 hours of Asian bodywork therapy, and we need a slightly different title. And there's precedent around the country to include the word bodywork in a title. So if it's registered massage / bodywork therapist, that would represent Asian bodywork therapist. Massage therapy alone does not represent Asian bodywork therapy. And there's many states that have laws where the education requirements are not in the law, like this law, and Asian bodywork therapists are not allowed to practice in those states. It includes Connecticut, Oregon, Florida, and many more. There's a precedent in North Carolina where they are licensed as massage / bodywork therapists. And that's what I'm asking for. It's very simple. And I know I don't have amendments, and I've been trying to get amendments, and they're not being forthcoming with agreement. So am I neutral? Maybe. Am I opposing? Maybe. Am I supporting? Not in this form. And yet, it's important that all therapeutic body work, that we have a good bill in Minnesota to represent what is being practiced in Minnesota. I guess that's all I need to say, and I thank you very much for allowing me to speak.
All right. Questions? And members, remember, we're rapidly getting to session here. Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I guess to the author, what's the opposition to including the word body work?
Representative Abler.
I had the bill that did all that before, and we couldn't get a hearing. And this is a 21-year process of trying to get something figured out. And part of it, on my side, is just procedural. It started as a massage bill and trying to be loyal to the process. I think I'm not at all close to it. The Board of Nursing is, they're interested in helping this group. The Asian bodywork part is a little more different than what they're accustomed to dealing with, and so they could be made to warm up to it, I think, if they were encouraged. But I'll let my witness comment about the process.
Representative Abel, how many committees has this all gone through already?
Three.
And it's going to two finance committees.
And where is it in the Senate?
They're going to move it after this.
So it hasn't moved out of committee in the Senate at all?
Well, they're waiting on the House to do it.
Well, no. I love that line. I really...
They think the House is a leader on most things.
Yeah, well, to say that the other body is waiting for the other body is an interesting paradigm, but I'm not going there.
Okay.
So it's not moving in the Senate at all. There may be options for you in the Senate, but you want Mr. Miller to respond to this issue?
Mr. Chair, there's a hearing on Monday. So
there's a hearing on Monday.
And that actually was my suggestion to these folks to work on that part there. And so.
All right. Mr. Miller?
Do you want to hear from
me? Quickly, because we're running out of time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kahn, there is ongoing discussion to try to address the concerns of the Asian bodywork therapy community. And we are in discussions about that. The biggest concern on our side is that the Board of Nursing approved taking on a registered massage therapist credential. Because, as I said, they have training in massage therapy. They understand massage therapy. Nurses, as a general rule, do not have training as part of their nursing training in Asian bodywork therapy, things like moxibustion and tongue pulses and things that are standard training for Asian bodywork therapists are not training that nurses receive as part of their standard education.
All right. Who else wishes to testify at this time? And we're going to try to get as many of the folks who are on the list. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Gregory Schmidt. I'm president of Minnesota Natural Health Legal Reform Project. I'm actually going to offer the testimony that you've been given in your packet from Diane Miller, who was unable to testify today. I think there's a great misconception out amongst legislators as to the fact that massage therapy is not regulated. That is not true. Chapter 146A has been in place for 9 years. It is working effectively. There are 27 paragraphs of prohibited conduct. It allows the cities to do a pre-screening of people who would apply for business licenses in their community. We have evidence of communities that have waived the license because the practitioner came forward and showed the disclosure notice and client bill of rights that is required to be distributed to clients before they begin working with the 146A practitioner. So the city's already recognized that 146A can be used effectively as a tool, just not enough cities are aware of that. And I will yield the balance of my time to other testifiers. Thank you.
All right. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the
record. Mr. Chair. Thank you for this time, as precious as it is. I'm Barbara York. I'm with the Minnesota Therapeutic Massage Network. So many things are here. We have been working with this since 1987. We worked with Carrie and with the schools to seek a different result than just having registration because of the problems across the country with trying to who's in, who's out, the cost of it, when the simple thing that we passed in 2001 was the 146A that allows everybody to work. Though this is said to be a voluntary registration, the cities, as you'll notice, that one of their testifiers is from the League of Cities, they want to make this mandatory, so the voluntary isn't there. The Senate is looking at a licensing bill. It's not the same as this, so there's lots of work to be done, and it's going to be the first hearing on Monday. It hasn't been heard there at all. The practitioners and consumers passed the 146A without opposition. This has opposition from the practitioners and from clients. The ABMP, which is another national organization, has great concern about this because of the accrediting. We have 45 schools in the state, and they are not equally accredited. There is one group in the federal register, which is part of the AMTA. It's COMPTA. That's where it was born out of. And it is under personal care and services. It is not under the health board. They also say in order to, there's so much that the school would have to meet in this registration to be able to teach anymore that they couldn't possibly necessarily make this. So there's so many ramifications for this, putting people out of work when it isn't necessary, especially in these economic times. There is not a case from the Attorney General's office asking for protection from physical harm. The things that have been presented to you are from our boundary issues that we're suddenly condensing so much that the his name is here. The investigator for the OCAP office found that there's no difference in states that are regulated or unregulated in the complaints on boundary issues. We don't have malpractice insurance because we don't hurt people. And our state has the statute 214, which we have been studying since 1987, and we have never found that a bill would be answerable to the 214. The board, the council, the Council of Health Boards had a conclusion on the very documents that you have been given. It says, based on experience, history, data, and knowledge of health regulation, the Council of Health Boards acknowledges that voluntary systems of regulation are ineffective in establishing competency standards and protecting the public safety. This does not do anything more than what we already have in place, and it's not costing us anything. It's not compromising a health board to deal with a personal care service. So the conflicts on the bill itself, the conflicting message, is this about prostitution? Is this about protecting the public? They get switched around because the ultimate thing is that this is about exclusivity, limiting the market, cutting people out, not only practitioners, modality trainers, schools. We have so much that will be gone when this passes through, as opposed to what we have right now, where people are working, making ends meet, and getting through life and making people happy. You don't have complaints about the quality of work because it's just like buying a scrambled egg. You know, it was stored properly, but the quality of that egg is a decision you move on with. If you get a bad massage, it's because it just didn't meet your needs.
We're going to have to, if we can have one more testifier.
This will put me out of work if this goes through. I can't afford the education, the continuing education. I can't do everything I know already with my thousands of hours. In 1 hour, I cannot do all that I already know. I don't need more continuing education.
All right. Representative Abler, we've had both sides here.
Just a short comment. The Senate bill that will be advanced is a delete-all based upon the status of the House bill after it went through all the process. And we'll be including all the changes you have in front of you. Personally, I'm amenable to working with the body workers at that level. I think that's appropriate and a good process thing. I don't need to rebut the witness. I have high regard for her. There's some things I disagree with, but I think the time is short.
All right. Any questions from the members? Seeing none, I'm going to... yes, Rep. Sam Horst.
I have a quick question. I have a lot of concerns about this bill, but a very quick question for the author. On page 6, on 11, fees. I think that's what Ms. York was getting at a little bit, not only for continuing education, but what sort of fees do you envision? I don't...
Representative Abler?
Thank you. I think it's $250. There's a list. I think it's in the range of that. The city fees range from $150, which is what Anoka charges, to $8,300, which is a city, I forget, that charges that. There's one fee instead of choosing to pay all the fees. A person need not do anything under this bill to continue. The word massage is not a protected term. It continues under the Chapter 146A, but just by the way, the oversight of that law has been defunded. And so there is no one at the Department of Health watching the CAM providers. So it's a way to get this profession, I believe, moved to a health profession and get it treated as that. If people want to stay under the old law, they can. No effort by this author to change anything with the witnesses you heard. And that's my testimony.
Members, this is going to finance. Representative Rukavina has requested the bill. So that's where it's going first. I don't know if it'll go anywhere after that. Representative Brookhaven has requested it. Further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that House File 1503, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to finance, and then we know where it'll go from there. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division has been requested. All those in favor, please raise your hands.
The vocal minority.
Why does that are opposed to regulation?
All those against, raise your hand. All those who are very loud.
You can see, Mr. Chair, to my right.
The motion is 10 to 3, so the motion prevails. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'd like to move the minutes of March 9th and 10th.
Minutes have been moved. Any discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Meeting is adjourned.